Hello, everyone. Welcome to Unmuted Generations. I'm Ryan Mew, and in each episode, we focus on expanding our horizons and personal knowledge of the world to cultivate a happy and healthy lifestyle. My guest in this week's episode is Christine Liu. I think we could all agree that during this time, mental health is incredibly important, especially for millennials and Gen Zers. They're starting out their career, they're making a ton of big moves, whether it's moving to another state, whether it's starting a family, whether it's transitioning to a new job even. And sometimes in the midst of all these transitions, a bunch of anxiousness arises and you'd like to go share your feelings with your friends and family, but sometimes you just need a little more help from an experienced professional. Well, Christine is a licensed clinical social worker and a therapist providing mental health services for anxious millennials struggling with life transitions through online therapy. In her free time, she also focuses on her side hustle ceramics business, Tiny Namaste Pottery. So without further ado, how's it going today, Christine? Thank you so much for coming on.
Good. Thanks for having me, Ryan. I'm really excited to be here.
I'm excited you're here too. I could only imagine that out of all the people or occupations that are busier during this time, that your occupation as a therapist would probably, you're probably getting clients like left and right, unfortunately, correct?
Right. It's getting pretty full and I just get a lot of new inquiries all the time. So definitely keeping me on my toes.
So when you say you're getting really full, like as a therapist, do you have like a certain bandwidth? Because I know obviously like you could take in as many people as you want in most cases, but at the same time, you want to make sure you're dedicating enough time and you're at like 100% when you're meeting each of your clients for these really real world problems.
Mm-hmm. Right. So I actually also work full time as a medical social worker in the daytime, 40 hours a week. And I do my therapy practice in the evenings after I finish my day job. And it's definitely a balance. So I did not start my therapy practice that long ago. It was only like, it was actually right at the beginning of COVID. So I am still learning as I go and learning how to balance my caseload of clients with work and with my ceramics business.
Yeah.
It's a lot, but I feel like I'm doing pretty well right now. Generally, I limit myself to like 3 or 4 clients at most in one day. And also like putting in time, scheduling time for myself throughout those like weekdays to just relax and rest and do other things. But I'm still learning how to figure out like what is a maximum like full caseload for me and what's comfortable. But right now I like what I'm doing.
Well, I really like how you said that, like what's a maximum caseload for me. I know obviously like whichever industry you go into, you could talk to an expert and they say, you could handle this much, you could handle this one much, but your situation and the way your style is like completely unique compared to everybody else. So I'm just curious, like what inspired you to become a therapist and really what were your early beginnings like?
Well, it was a lot of struggle because starting is the most difficult part for me to like get over that hump of fears and like insecurities and like,
yeah,
doubt of like, oh, can I actually do this and start a therapy like private practice?
Did you have like a lot of yes men in your corner, like people who are just like, yeah, you could do this, or was it kind of more organic?
It was like a mix, actually. So I'm a social worker. My credentials are being a licensed clinical social worker, LCSW. And I consulted with some of my colleagues and classmates on like, oh, are you guys doing any, like, are you guys doing private practice full-time on the side? How do you feel about it? Like, do you think it's doable to work at the same time? And some people were like saying that it was too much to focus on two kind of businesses or two different jobs at the same time. But also a lot of my classmates I found aren't doing private practice. So it was maybe their own insecurities and fears talking, but I did get some naysayers at first saying, oh, you need more experience and this and that. But I feel that I have a lot of experience coming from a background of working as a hospice and home health social worker for grief and loss. So it took me maybe 3 or 4 years to really pursue actually starting my private practice, with getting like the business license and website up. And what really kind of took me to do it was my accountant, which is which is like a funny story, because I go to him every year for my taxes. And every year I tell him, oh, I want to start my like private practice business, this and that. And one year I inquired with him how he started his business. And he just said, well, you just got to do it. And like, and he told me that like, he hopes that next year I would come back with like starting my business already. So
he put pressure on you.
he did. And it was very motivating. And it's interesting because like with other people around me in my life, family and like friends, my partner, they all encouraged me to do it. But I didn't get that like push I needed until speaking to my accountant.
Well, I think it's like the same thing with family and friends. Like they'll listen to my podcast and they'll be like, oh, your podcast is great, et cetera, et cetera. Or, oh, you should venture into this. You have the skills for it. And in my head, I'm like, oh, but it's because you're like kind of biased towards me. Like, you know what I want to do. Mm-hmm. And it's not like a true factual answer. Like, I'm not saying that they don't believe in me or anything like that, or they're just like trying to make me feel better. Like they probably actually do believe in me, but it's like an internal battle, that a bias that we create inside our head almost. And sometimes it's just better hearing it from a secondary resource where it's, we don't really know that much about them. Like we're there and more of an acquaintance to acquaintance basis. And for me, at least, that's where I've like always understood things more, when I'm talking to people who I don't know that much. Mm-hmm. But like my best friend could tell me the same thing and I'll be like, no, you don't know.
I totally agree. And that's why therapy is very important and good for people, because it is like another person, who a third party, who does not really know who you are yet and your background yet. And just like hearing from them and hearing that validation helps a lot. And like understanding where you're coming from. And it's not somebody in your personal life. Sometimes you definitely need a third party perspective.
Exactly. So what made you really go dive into the mental health or psychology area of study, like growing up and stuff like that? Was that a subject you were always interested in? Or was it like personal experiences motivated you to start enhancing your knowledge on that subject?
It's a little bit of both and everything. So I initially thought I wanted to be like a career counselor or higher ed counselor. And I realized it's not exactly what I was looking for. I wanted something a little bit more broad and like that can cater to many types of people and not only students. And so I was looking around for different programs for grad schools to apply for. And at the same time, I was not getting any job perspectives with my sociology major. And I realized I needed to just get a master's and go to grad school to have any type of substantial like job salary, I guess. And I went into social work, my master's of social work. And I wanted to do that specifically because it was very broad and it gave me so many options to pursue. You can go into the medical field, you can go into child or adult protective services, you can work for the government and counties and jails and foster care, community mental health, even I think consulting for large companies and also media. So there was just so many options, and that's exactly what I needed at the time, to have those options and figure my stuff out, like my career path. And I knew I wanted to be like a therapist potentially in the future, or counselor. And that was also one of the routes. So from being an MSW, you can pursue your LCSW, licensed clinical social worker. And that can give you that option to have your own private practice.
That's really interesting. When we were talking about kind of being an educational counselor versus more of like a therapist or like a life counselor, because somebody who graduated college in the last 2 or 3 years, the way I look at it too is, yeah, you could help somebody pick out their classes, put them on the right steps for a real career. by taking all the classes and helping them graduate in 4 years, tracking their grades. But as you know, as well as I know, there are so many other factors other than just like business and career and success that can impede a person's growth. Like they could be in a relationship with someone, or they could unfortunately have a traumatic incident happen to them, or they could deal with family problems. As somebody who specializes with like millennials, is there like a main focus group you work on as a therapist? Because I know there are some therapists who are like, I specialize in addiction. There are some who specialize in maybe just more niche situations.
Well, I like working with millennials and Asian American millennials specifically, because I myself am in that category. I'm also an Asian American millennial.
Well, it makes sense, you know. Yeah. I wouldn't want like a baby mover talking to me or something like that, acting like they know social media and whatnot.
Right. And I'm not that far from like being a Gen Zer. But so yeah, that's why I focus on Asian American millennials. But also within that, there's just so many struggles and transitions that millennials do face, including like moving to different cities or having like that change from being a student to a working professional, or like having your first serious relationship. So there are so many transitions in life and like things you need to adjust to as a millennial in your like 20s to 30s or Gen Zer. And I realized that's exactly that population I wanted to work with so long ago, thinking that that would be how I could help as a potential career counselor back then. But I realized that being a therapist, I can kind of cater to the ideal client that I want to work with and focus on narrowing down my niche for having clients that like align with me. And that's kind of what I've been doing. And I really enjoy it. I also focus on, just because of my background in grief and loss, I focus a lot on anybody who is needing of support for grief and loss, whether that be like a loss of a relationship, a family member or loved one, a job, a friendship, pet, mobility, or kind of like any kind of physical impairment, chronic illness. So I'm very experienced and familiar with that. And I realized that for like young adults, that could be a difficulty they go through as well, some sort of grief and loss. And I like working with millennials who have anxiety, who are struggling with anxiety issues. I focus a lot on using cognitive behavioral therapy and mindfulness techniques in my practice. So I feel that I have a lot of like experience to help serve my ideal clients. And in turn, they naturally look for me specifically because I'm Asian American. I have this kind of like specialization and background in the things I've listed. And it kind of was organic. It was both them. This is like the population that is looking for me. And also this is the population I look for.
That makes a lot of sense. Like I said, I wouldn't want to, with me, if I can't necessarily relate to the person on a not necessarily a personal level, like they would have had to go through the situation I went through, but just being around the same age range, understanding the culture. One thing that I've kind of read up on in terms of mental health is like there's like health shocks for each generation. Maybe like in the baby boomer generation, they had a health shock with going through different wars and stuff like that. Millennials, I'm sure that millennials have their own set of mental health problems, but you know, what type of problems do you generally hear from them on a day-to-day basis? Obviously working with an Asian American millennial specifically.
A lot of my clients come to me with like stress, like from work or their parents. So a lot of work-life balance issues or just overwhelm and burnout from stress at work. I think there's just kind of like this, like, I guess a lot of my like clients are very
high achievers.
Yes, they're high achievers. And because they have anxiety, they also sometimes struggle with perfectionism and have that internal pressure for themselves to do as much as they can to prove themselves at work or like with relationships or family. And it leads to burnout and stress and anxiety and like lack of sleep or poor like taking care of your health. So like they often neglect their self-care because of this like mentality or work culture or like just even the Asian American like model minority pressure. So it's common to overwork yourself. And especially in this day where it's kind of like sometimes glamorized to just work so much and achieve so much, they struggle with those concerns and trying to figure out how to have a better work-life balance and cultivate more self-care.
I agree. Whenever I go to Las Vegas, I always see those eat, work, sleep, and like repeat shirts. They're selling them for like $5 out the little shacks and everything. And I'm always like, that is such an unhealthy way to live. If those are your only goals, like focus on your family, focus on your relationships, focus on like creative outlets and hobbies and all sorts of things. And I think there's something with like burnout where there's a difference between overworking in particular and burnout, because overworking, it could be just like you're putting in too much hours and you're fatigued. But some people, they don't feel like they're overworking because their main priority is their business. They have fun working 12 to 15 hour days at their business. That brings them joy in life. But if you're just working too much and you're doing it for like the wrong reasons and it's not bringing you any joy and fulfillment, I think that's where a lot of the problems come in personally. Yeah,
definitely. I agree, because there is a difference between working a lot because you enjoy it or like working a lot because like you feel this like pressure to like maintain that model of success and like glamorizing working often or too much, neglecting yourself. So there's definitely a difference. And I think that sometimes it's difficult to see, but ways to notice that you are suffering from burnout is maybe kind of neglecting like your nutrition or health, like having your stress kind of manifest to like having poor health some way, like getting more like headaches or like just not eating well or just not getting enough sleep. You're like thinking too much about work stress at night and that's keeping you up. I find that a lot of my clients have difficulty sleeping because they are having anxiety about the upcoming work week. So that could be very stressful.
It could be. And it could be very detrimental and shave years off the lifespan. I can't emphasize how important it is to be healthy. I always characterize as like the body as like a vehicle, and like food is essentially like our fuel. And whenever somebody is like really, really stressed, my thing is I always see them go to Costco and they'll buy like one of those 12 batches of muffins. And if they finish it, I'm like, you're definitely stressed. Those muffins aren't that good. When you say you work with like these individuals and some of your techniques that you use, you said they were around like mindfulness and you said it was cognitive behavior. Yeah. So, so with these individuals, like what are some of like the methodologies or things that you would say to them?
Well, so it really is based on their individual like sources of anxiety and stress. Sometimes because they might be thinking of the worst possible outcome or even just like a work call that is scheduled with their manager. So they might have that anxiety of like it coming up and like thinking, oh, maybe the worst thing is going to happen. I'm going to get reprimanded or fired or something like that. But in reality, we can't tell the future. We can't really mind read either. We don't know what's actually going to happen. So different ways to go about it would be kind of reframing your thought and mindset. And what do you know is actually true in that situation? What are the facts? Kind of like taking a step back and seeing what is actually true instead of jumping to conclusions.
Yeah. And I agree. I think a lot of people have that in their mind. Like even me, when I get ready for podcast interviews, sometimes when I'm about to record with my guest, I'm like, oh man, I'm worried. This is like, I'm going to be talking about this subject. I may not know as much. And what if it sucks? What if people hate what I'm talking about, etc.? I think it's very important for us to understand that, yeah, it's most of the time what we think of is we think of like the worst possible situation. Mm-hmm. And there's like a 0.01% chance mm-hmm. that comes true. Mm-hmm. And then in the situation that comes true, like it's just adversity and we'll be able to get through it. But I think for a lot of people, most people do understand, like maybe they're like, okay, like this isn't something that is going to happen, but I'm still going to worry about it. You ever bring in things like meditation or yoga mm-hmm. or anything like that?
Yeah. So definitely for those cases where they can't like stop those like thoughts from coming in, because it is hard. So I recommend like trying to take a step back and being able to breathe and take a like something, do something that's grounding for you, which could be like breath work, breathing, also meditation or yoga. And sometimes with my clients, I'm actually also a yoga certified instructor. I don't think I mentioned that. But yeah, I'm 200 hours yoga certified instructor. And sometimes I bring some of that background also and practice into my sessions with my clients, and I help them through calming their mind a little bit and slowing down by guiding them through a guided meditation where we talk about, well, I mean, where I kind of allow them to close their eyes and relax their jaws, relax their shoulders away from their ears, take a slow, deep breath in.
So it's more like restorative yoga, right?
Yeah, it's very restorative.
That makes sense. Where does this, from your perspective, where does this like anxiety, this bundled up anxiety, like really originate from? Where they can't like get it out of their head?
Well, it could be just so long that they've had a lot of anxiety. It could be something that was from their childhood. Like often we hear that things stem from our childhood and could be from our parents, like our relationships with our parents and how responses are or how reactive they are towards us. And it could be from that or just past experience that they are adverse to and feel like they might just continue happening. But that's also, it's also a common thinking issue where you feel like, oh, this is always going to be this way. This is not going to change. But actually every experience with each person is different. Every experience is different. So with a new relationship, friend, meeting, work situation, everything is different.
I agree. I could only imagine how hard it is right now if you've gone to like a new relationship and it was COVID and just all the stress from it. Like, oh, do their ideals match with mine, or should I meet up with them because I don't want to catch the disease? It's really probably mentally tolling on them. And do you think with some of the individuals you meet, do you ever have to suggest potentially seeing like a psychiatrist to get a prescription or something along those lines?
Yeah, sure. I think it's important to have a team of professionals helping. So if I feel like they have some kind of like potentially diagnosed or undiagnosed mental health diagnosis, maybe reaching out to their like primary care physician to have that assessed, and if needed, getting a referral for a psychiatrist as well.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And that would just be to like really restore like the dopamine and to levels to like regularity, correct?
Mm-hmm. Right. So it's definitely okay to have medication and take it if you need it. I think that if you like need to have medication and therapy, that's completely fine. Whatever works for you. Some people don't like medication at all and only want to try to do therapy or self-soothing in other ways. And that's fine too. So there's no right or wrong.
Yeah. Looking up some statistics online, 21% of Americans do use the therapy and prescription combo. So it is like a combo that does help. I feel like a lot of people should really, like if they have mental health issues, do everything they can mm-hmm. to fix it. I know there's generally a stigma still, even if it's decreased over time, but a stigma against like mental health and therapy. how like some individuals, they just don't want to see therapists because they don't want to get laid fun of by their friends, or they just feel like, oh, I'm going to be seen as like a crazy person. Like when you're meeting with these individuals, is it generally like they've hit their breaking point, or they're just, they feel like, hey, I'm about to hit my breaking point and I need to talk?
It's a little bit of both. Some of my clients have been like curious and like wanting to pursue therapy for several years and they just haven't yet. And they reach out when they are ready, like prepared for it. And some of my other clients feel like they're just going through a really deep funk in their life and don't know like how to get better and feel like they don't know what to do for support. And they reach out to a therapist. And so it's both. It's really dependent on the, like what's going on with that person. Some people just even like having somebody to vent to as a therapist because it's better.
They don't have like a support system or something like that.
Yeah. To increase their support system. And also that it might be better to have a third party, like a neutral third party to listen.
Do you see different like trends or differences working with an Asian American millennial compared to maybe a millennial of another ethnicity, or maybe somebody a little older or younger?
Well, definitely. Well, do you mean like older as in not a millennial, like somebody who's an older adult? Or
yeah, somebody who's an older adult, let's say like 50s or 60s. Like, do you see like the way they think is generally different, or the way they handle grief or loss, is they handle it in a different way?
Yes. No, totally. There's definitely a difference with working with older adults. They have different concerns. A lot of their concerns can be like health issue related, pain, or just like loss of independence and mobility because of like an illness, or like strained relationship with like family member, or just like lack of support and isolation and loneliness and depression, and just it compiles and compounds over their like years because they have experienced a lot and could be a lot of trauma too that they've had and that are unresolved. So I find that older adults and the generation above me, they have a lot to unpack and a lot of things that are just unresolved. Could be like regret from not doing something too, or like
Or the inability to even pursue something, because during that time it was like the Vietnam War, the Cold War, you know, World War II. And I feel like one of the things back then too is not talking about your feelings as much. People, they don't necessarily want to show weakness, not necessarily saying like they thought going to therapy was bad, but just they didn't really want to share the private aspects of their life that, mm-hmm. with somebody else. Mm-hmm. Now it's like you go on Twitter or you go on TikTok or go on Facebook or anywhere, it's people are more open to talking about their feelings. And I can't really tell if it's like a negative or a positive for our society, because it's some of these feelings could be really malicious. And it's like, oh, something that you say over social media, it doesn't mean it's like that's the true perception of the world. That's not how the world acts. It could be just like a troll or something like that.
Mm-hmm. I see. Yeah, definitely. I think just over different generations and eras and decades that you experience and live through, there are different norms for them and like different levels of being comfortable with expressing like your feelings. And for older people, it might be more stigmatized to let people know how you're actually feeling. And with, I think our current society, it's definitely getting more, well, like more accepted. And like, there's just a less of a stigma for getting therapy. And I think it's very helpful. It's definitely needed now. And I think people are more willing to talk about how they feel, whether it is like negative or positive. I think just being able to voice what you feel and think it's not a bad thing. Everyone has their right to say what they believe in. And we have to kind of recognize our own like biases and our own judgments too. So part of being a therapist is also like understanding our own cultural biases or personal biases or preferences, and just holding that space for people to kind of express themselves. And granted, it also matters if they're doing it safely and not harming anyone else or themselves.
Yeah. Exactly. Like, I think it's so hard to determine like what's harming somebody and what's not. It's you were saying that with the older generation, they may not talk as much, but personally in my community, you know, I've seen like older individuals get on Facebook and it's the total opposite because they're old and they just don't care. So they're just like, I'm just going to say whatever I want on Facebook and you're going to have to listen to it and stuff. And I think it's the issue right now is what is like, not necessarily safe, but what is the difference between expressing yourself and expressing something that could potentially harm somebody. And no matter what, people are just going to hear stuff that they don't like. That's my thought on it. So it's just like everybody should be open to expressing themselves because you're obviously going to disagree with somebody's perspective. If everybody agreed and had the same perspective, then we would be living in like a perfect world and we'd be like so efficient as humans. But that's not how it works. Do you ever, in terms of like mindfulness practices, I know that obviously like millennials who are going through career transitions or maybe they graduated college late and they're just like starting off their career now. Like that's obviously a big transition. And for these individuals, do you ever try to, in terms of mindfulness, just say like, hey, don't try to use your phone as much. Maybe stay away from these types of people. Find a new support system.
Yeah, definitely. I find that sometimes there's anxieties because like you might be comparing yourself to other people's successes. And it's so easy to see how everyone else is like doing on their highlight reels through social media. So definitely limiting that like social media or trigger to what is like causing you to compare yourself and like feeling less, even though that's not true. Everyone has their own path and stories. So we don't know what other people are going through, even though they may seem that they are doing so well and successful. Like you don't know who is going through a difficult time.
Yeah, everybody's pain is their own maximum. And you have to not necessarily like acknowledge everybody and just say like, oh, I will be in your corner. I'm going to be your number one supporter while you go through this incident. But I think it's just more of look, like you don't need to expect everything out from them just because they aren't responding to a specific text or maybe they're like distancing, like maybe they're going through something and you don't really know. I've had several personal situations happen to that to where it's maybe I had a friend who didn't really want to talk to anybody because like she got rejected from a job interview and I would have never like known that. For you, how important is it also in addition to just not just like practicing mindfulness, but also just having a creative outlet to de-stress? Because I know you have this ceramics thing and I can only imagine with like your schedule, like you're probably really busy, but this probably doesn't feel like work either.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Also before that, I wanted to add that I think it's really important to be self-aware and recognize where other people might be and respecting their boundaries too, and trying not to take it personally.
Yeah. And well, I think it's being self-aware, but like at the same time, being not necessarily selfish, but just like focusing on yourself and just understanding, look, you can care about this person as much as you want, but like at the end of the day, like they have to get through it. Like you should focus on your own stuff.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. I think just meeting them where they're at, because maybe you're noticing they aren't as responsive and that's okay. And just try not to take it like personally.
Yeah. So in terms of like your ceramics business, like how has that creative outlet like really helped you? Aside from like your career aspirations, because obviously I'm assuming when you were studying for your licensed clinical social worker degree and stuff like that, that wasn't like in the back of your head.
No. So I started ceramics like probably a couple years after finishing my master's of social work. And it was because it was like, I was in a bad time in my life. I was going through depression and just, I needed something to like distract myself, help me get out of it. And just like, I wanted to feel like happy again. And so I thought, okay, I'm going to try something new. And it was ceramics. And I did try ceramics like in high school, 10 like years prior, and I hated it. And I thought, okay, well, maybe it'll be different this time. And it was, and I just completely fell in love. And it was just like such a strong source and main source of my like healing, my mental health healing. And I encourage anybody to find something similar like that for them, something where you can get in the zone. And I feel like it's kind of like meditation in a way where I'm just like not thinking about anything and just like, I'm just in flow. Yeah.
Well, you can't really think about anything because if you're working on it, you forget something midway, you're going to like be messing up and you're going to have to redo your pod or your plate that you're making. I was kind of the same way, actually. When I was in high school, I did photography class and I honestly messed around a lot in that class. I wasn't a very good high school student. So I just saw it as like an easy A, which it was. I was like very thankful for the teacher and like my classmates and stuff, but I wasn't like interested in the subject. It was just more like of a course to make friends and stuff. Mm-hmm. And then similar to your situation, I had a situation to where I was just kind of facing depression and I wasn't so happy and I was in school still. I was working really hard. I was getting the grades I wanted, but I just didn't feel like any fulfillment. So I would go out to like take pictures. I bought like a DSLR off of like eBay and stuff. And it was actually like a really fun hobby. I quit doing it as much because of COVID. Mm-hmm. I was like, oh, I don't know how good it is to go out, but I'm hoping to eventually go out there again. Yeah. Another thing I wanted to say is like, are we like with creative outlets, are we allowed to define what is a creative outlet compared to what is not a creative outlet, but somebody's just trying to make it one? Because there are times when I personally talk with individuals and they're just like, yeah, my creative outlet is like, I create like LinkedIn content or I network with people and stuff like that. And I'm like, I don't know if that sounds like a creative outlet to me or if you're just like trying to convince yourself to work harder and stuff like that. Like, mm-hmm. When do you know something's a creative outlet?
It's really up to the person. They have that decision or, yeah. And whatever we're thinking, like that's our perspective. So I don't think that we're able to so much define it for them. So kind of like holding back our own judgments and thoughts on it and then giving them that space to define what creativity means to them. And maybe making LinkedIn stuff is their creative outlet.
I think it really just depends on like the reason you do it though. Like mm-hmm. If your creative outlet is like to actually focus on your creativity aspect, because some people they're like, oh, I'm not creative, so I can't like have a creative outlet. Like I think creativity is more of a skill that like you build over time personally. But I know some individuals, I guess, where it's like they'll create, for example, like the LinkedIn content thing. If they're creating it solely to like get likes and stuff, I'm not sure if that could be defined as a creative outlet. To where I would define a creative outlet as like it could be good or bad, but like you're putting your true intentions out into the world.
Like, do you mean it's more of self-care?
Yeah, it's more of self-care. Like that should be the primary goal of it. It shouldn't be like, I'm using it for supposedly a monetary benefit. Like that's not the primary aspect. If it was to go away, then I would be crushed in a way because I wouldn't have that outlet of creativity, but not because it would in fact affect like my monetary part of my life.
I think it's like a fine line. Like you can definitely be creative and use it for monetary like gain and also have self-care and be creative with it in other ways. So I don't know. I think it's just it's a very fine line. Depends on the person and their situation. But I think it's also good to be aware of our own biases too and not placing our judgments on what other people are doing for themselves. I just think that whatever you're doing for yourself in terms of self-care, whether it is like creativity with some kind of content creating or anything else, if that is giving you self-care and you enjoy it, sure. That can be something like creative.
Yeah. It's really the judgment thing, like you said. Like I know a friend who builds keyboards on Twitch. To me that seems like the most like uninteresting thing ever personally. If he's listening to this, I'm sorry, but I just don't get any satisfaction from building a keyboard. But you know, with him, he gets a lot of satisfaction out of it. And like I said, like I feel like his happiness came first and then the monetization came second. Like he built them and then people ended up just watching his Twitch channel.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I totally agree. Like what we may consider creative and self-care might not be the same for everybody else. Who are we to judge? And like, some people might not think that podcasting is like a creative outlet.
Oh yeah. So a lot of people hate it, you know? Like I talk with my friends. I was actually trying to find a co-host for this season before I started automating things to like divvy out my responsibilities. But I was talking with one of my friends about it. He's like, I just can't listen to myself talking. Like, it's too much for me. I don't even see how you enjoy this. But he's like, I just realized I support you. I'll never listen to your podcast, but I support you 100%. I'm like, okay, well, it's everybody's cup of tea. Everybody has their own.
And I heard you say something that I think was very important, is just being there to support your friends and whatever you pursue. So that's kind of like a role as a friend, is to be, you know, their supporter and not place like your judgments on them, because that might make you feel like bad about it.
I'll make it feel like you're bossing them around, and that's not my cup of tea. Obviously, we're all stuck at our computers and we're staying home, COVID-19, and the future is so unpredictable right now. There was a movie that came out, I think it was 3 or 4 months ago. It's called Greenland. And it was like, oh, there's this world that's similar, pretty much our world. And there was a meteor that was going to hit, and it was going to destroy pretty much all of human life. So people had to go down in bunkers and stuff. But like, similar to, I'm not saying obviously a meteor is going to hit, and I really hope a meteor doesn't hit Earth, but none of us could have predicted like COVID-19 could happen. It kind of put all of our plans out of flux, and a lot of people are like experiencing anxiety and worry, and they're just like, oh, I don't know what's going to happen in the future. I don't know how long this is going to last. This may delay a wedding, a career transition. With more people at their computers and like staying home due to COVID-19 and this really like new environment that we're living in, what advice would you give somebody to really just stay healthy and with their mind and their body and, you know, everything?
I would encourage them to get some sunlight exposure or sun exposure, like vitamin D. I think that would help with your mood, making sure you're able to eat regularly and avoiding foods that make you feel bad, like junk food can make you feel groggy or just not good, I guess. So eating foods that make you feel good, giving you good energy, and also like having a like good sleep hygiene, being able to sleep well and feel good in the morning, and avoiding like things that could make you stay up late, being on electronics, making sure you have a good sleep environment, a peaceful place, avoiding the clock, looking at the clock, and connecting with people that you want to connect with, whether it be like social distancing, more messages or phone calls or video calls, and being able to do what you can control right now, because we can't visit family who are like far away, but you can call them. You can kind of keep in touch with them and see and check in and see how they're feeling. There are different, again, like there's like ways to creatively adjust to this situation. This is like a huge adjustment year, last year and this year for most people. And it's just trying to adapt and adjust to what is given to you at this moment. And there's always going to be change. Change is inevitable. So a lot of people have difficulties adjusting to change and transitions. So I think it's kind of being mindful of what you can control right now.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think those are all things that like we hear and know at the back of our head, but there's like never enough times we can't hear it. Like it's so important to stay mindful and just healthy right now for our immune system and just really just our mental health. Like our body is our temple for our mind, really. And we need to take care of that temple. So I really appreciate you sharing that message. And I was just wondering, as a last question, what are your goals for 2021? And is there anything you really want to plug in?
My goals for 2021. I had a hard time thinking about this like answer, because I didn't really make any goals for myself, except for probably just being more creative with like new ceramics, like a new ceramics line. And also like having clients that I'm aligned with in my practice. And I think so far, I feel like I'm doing pretty well with both areas. Yeah.
I think you're doing pretty well. And I'll put all of your links in the description below, but I just want to thank you for coming on. I really appreciate it. And people want to follow your socials for mental health tips or get in contact with you or check out your pottery, they'll all be in the links in the description below. For all those listening, thank you so much for tuning into this episode. You know, I really appreciate the support as always. You guys are really awesome. This is over 50 episodes now, and I appreciate all the kind words I've received. And if you guys have a couple minutes today, in the link in the description below next to Christine's link, there will also be a separate link unrelated to the podcast about Myanmar. As many of you may have heard in the news, Myanmar is currently going through a military coup right now. A lot of the individuals living in the country are going without food supplies, running water, their electricity is being turned on and off, and they're really just fending for themselves. So if you guys want to support a good cause, please visit that link below, donate, research the incident, share it out on your socials. That country needs all the support that we can offer it right now. Other than that, if you guys enjoyed the episode, please leave a rating or review. Really helps spread the word. Subscribe to the podcast to stay updated with the latest episodes every week. And other than that, I'll see you guys later. Enjoy the rest of your day.